Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Mauricio, we don't spoil things here. We actively avoid spoilers because I think it's more fun to watch pro wrestling without hearing things that are going to happen ahead of time. But 2 weeks ago, we did say on this very show that Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre would be two good additions to this match. We had other ideas too, other possible directions they could go. Certainly CM Punk was in the news back then too, but Orton and Drew seemed to make the most sense, and today it became official. The 4-on-4 became 5-on-5. Drew McIntyre declaring or clarifying he is not part of the Judgment Day, but he does share an enemy with them and a cause that makes him want to be in War Games, which is getting Jey Uso in a cage. But Adam Pearce told Cody and company that they needed a fifth partner then too, and they needed it by the end of the show. And at the end of the show ended with the worst kept secret, especially with Cody dropping a word about having a friend who he has a legacy with. And as there's a legacy box ad on my TV as I talk. That's very weird. I mean, just a coincidence. But I'm like, why is the word I just said on the TV screen? Anyway, the legacy person he was speaking about, crowd knew it. They started chanting Randy. Randy Orton, part of the legacy group. So rumors would be Teddy Biasi Jr. squashed officially late on Raw tonight. Mauricio, I thought they did a really good job telling this story, even if some people are like, it was predictable. Who cares? They did a good job with the story, and unpredictability is not the standard for a good angle. It's the performances and the context of everybody, and I thought they did a really good job setting the stage and executing it tonight. And I'm glad Randy didn't appear magically somehow in the building. That would have not been believable. Unless they, you know, said he was there for a photo shoot or to, you know, check in again or have his final physical before being cleared. I guess they could have gotten away with it. But I think saving the pot for Saturday makes the most sense. So, Mauricio, your thoughts on all that?
I mean, overall, I do agree. It makes sense to save Randy Orton's big pop for the night, for Survivor Series, for Chicago. But at the same time, I guess I didn't realize, and I was expecting Randy Orton to actually show up here. So when it didn't happen, I was just a little bit deflated.
And do you agree with me that if they did have to have a reason for him to be there? Because if Drew adds himself to the match and Pierce says, you need to go find a partner, and they scramble, Cody and company scramble for 2.5 hours to find one, it wouldn't make sense for Randy to have time to get there. That's a problem. Like, I like things to make sense. But if they had said, he's there to get a final physical clearance or, you know, whatever. I mean, I guess they could have explained it. But I still would argue saving the pot. I get being deflated, and maybe I'm underrating how much people would have rather had Randy's music play or him come out. But I think saving it for Saturday and making people tune in to Peacock to see him for the first time in a long time is more of a hook than having that crowd pop or him actually appearing in person tonight.
I don't know. I agree. It will make for the, it. Well, it kind of hurts the show. It will improve the pay-per-view. But at the same, I just think it's kind of funny that you said it wouldn't make sense for Randy Orton to just show up here. But last week they did the exact same thing with Becky Lynch, and she just showed up there.
I know. I didn't like that either.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it kind of hurts this show to me, but it will improve the pay-per-view, which I can accept that.
Yeah, yeah. So is there any chance? I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. I should say, is there any chance? Do you think there are any that Orton's just going to be a good partner and work on behalf of Cody and Sammy and Seth and Jay? Or should people be on the lookout for a possibility? We haven't seen Randy in a while. And maybe a feud that can keep Cody occupied going into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season is a feud with Randy Orton. I mean, is that on your radar? Do you think it's possible? Do you like that idea? Because Randy's turned so many times, and Cody could feud with Drew McIntyre, could feud with someone else, but Orton against Cody would be a good way to occupy him for a little while. And it would also explain why they don't have the tag title still if they wanted Cody to go into a singles feud.
Well, I mean, Randy versus Cody would be a good feud to keep Cody occupied, but being realistic, I think it would make more sense for Randy to have issues with Jey Uso, because last time we saw him, the Bloodline were the ones that took him out. So while Randy versus Cody could be fun, it would make more sense to pivot into Randy versus Jey after War Games. And maybe do Drew versus Cody.
No, they could do both in a way. Like, the impetus for Randy turning could be, why'd you bring this jackass to Raw, Cody? And Orton has an issue with both. And that could lead to Orton having matches against both Jey and Cody. I like that it's not obvious. And it's very possible that Randy is just loyal to the group, stays babyface. I mean, the challenge with Randy is fans love him. They cheer him, whether he's heel or face. They succeeded in turning Drew. Having Randy come in and suddenly turn could actually work against the momentum that Drew has, because now another big star, I'm not ready to call Drew a legacy star, but certainly Randy is small L, not big L for the old faction name. I don't think you want to take away from that by having Randy suddenly turn too. So it probably makes more sense for Randy to come back and just align with the fan reaction. But we'll see. I mean, it's always tempting with Randy and turning heel, because his character is so unapologetic and it's sort of predictable with him that if he's got a personal issue, he doesn't care. He'll turn on someone.
I mean, I think Randy Orton it's always a better choice to have him as a heel. I think he's only worked as a babyface like twice in his career, like in 2011 and when he was teaming with Matt Riddle. So it's always a good idea to just, if anything is not getting over or the crowd is not responding well, yeah, just to run the Orton heel. It will be fine.
The match feels like a big deal. I think they've done a good job making War Games, the men's War Games match, which is what we're talking about, feel like the stakes are high. I think they did a good job explaining the rules to fans. They didn't assume knowledge. They had a good video package, somewhat generic, but it's fine. Cole talking about the value of the advantage and the buildup throughout, with who is going to wrestle in the advantage match in the main event. I thought it was well done too. People made their case for where they wanted it. And then once it became Drew and Jey, I think they explained themselves well. And obviously there was a lot riding on Drew not letting down Judgment Day. Did you like the build up to that and how they told that story?
Throughout the show, I think they did a really good job starting with the Drew McIntyre promo at the start. Make this whole show run around this feud with the whole teasing about the advantage match and the fifth member. They did a really good job presenting this match as the big storyline that I hope will come to an end at Survivor Series.
And what do you think? I mean, we'll just get ahead of ourselves here. What do you think the finish will be, or what are the most likely outcomes that either settle things or propel things forward?
One of my biggest issues I've had with Raw for the last few months is that Judgment Day have been feuding with the combination of Sami, Cody, Seth, Jey, and Kevin Owens for so long that I just want the babyface team to win, and so this feud can come to an end. And probably the best way I think that they could do it is by having Judgment Day not implode, but have some kind of actual friction, like maybe have Damian Priest accidentally, I don't know, cost Finn Balor or something. They've been doing this thing where Damian Priest is the leader for the War Games match.
Yep.
So maybe have him eat the pin. Maybe rely really heavily on Judgment Day friction, because that's one way to people of them away from the babyface team. Maybe have Drew abandoned by Judgment Day. He doesn't like them, and maybe at one point he realizes this ain't worth it. I can't beat Jey Uso with this guy, so he just walks away, kind of like they did with Blood and Guts earlier this year. And yeah, I think I think Judgment Day, one way or another, will lose, because it will be kind of weird to just have Randy Orton lose his return match. And it would be a good way to finally put this feud to an end.
What did you think of Drew's promo at the beginning of the show? They opened with him in the ring making his case. And, you know, I had said last week, Drew kicking Jay wasn't a for sure tradition. Well, I shouldn't say for sure. It was for sure, but it hadn't yet reached the point of a heel turn, because all Drew was doing, because he had been respectful to Seth earlier, all Drew did is take out an enemy, and he had a reason to do it that fans could understand, because they were rooting for Drew and against the Bloodline back when Drew was screwed over at Clash at the Castle. So attacking Jay was just consistent with Drew sort of settling a score. It didn't, to me, come across as an official heel turn, even if it was obviously headed that way. And so did his promo tonight and aligning with the Judgment Day, but not joining them, and then beating Jay clean constitute what is traditionally a heel turn, because, and if so, why? And I would posit it was not anything I just said, but his attitude towards the fans. Well, not quite as negative as Gunther, which we'll get to. His sort of, you're either with me or you're not, and if you're not, you never were. That, to me, is sort of laying the stage, setting the stage and laying the groundwork for fans to boo him officially, but also inviting people who are on his side to cheer him. But he's going to be booked, I think, exclusively against babyfaces, which is the very definition of being a heel. So your thoughts on that promo and that aspect of kind of the path he's taking, and at what point does he go from, he's obviously on the verge of being a heel, to he is now a heel?
I really like the Drew McIntyre promo. Ever since he, I don't know, I can't remember where it started, but ever since he just, it was after losing to Gunther, he would just keep doing these heel, slightly heelish promos, and it just, I really liked how it progressed from him just being more annoyed at Riddle to him just stop saving baby faces because he doesn't care. I really like the progression, and this promo really, it really worked in making him, turning him a heel, while giving him a proper reason, like, I can understand why he's doing it. I don't agree, but I can understand why Drew McIntyre has chosen this path. And like you said, I think the part where he just turns on the fans and tells them that they never were fans of him if they turned on him. I really like that part because I think in theory he could have come back as from this Judgment Day thing. Somehow, maybe just keep this as a Drew versus Jay feud, and maybe after that return Drew back to a baby face, but just him focusing on the fans, just that simple line. I really like how that's the point where Drew is not returning from this, at least for not anywhere, not anytime soon.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's good. All right. Well, let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get to phone calls and emails and cover other topics from this final Raw before Survivor Series. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, November 20th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and a bunch of podcasts. I host a bunch of podcasts throughout the week, including this weekend's post-pay-per-view roundtable following AEW Full Gear with a lot of good matches, a lot of controversy from a storyline standpoint, and then some interesting fallout after the event with the media Q&A, which Eric Kroll wrote an editorial about on pwtorch.com today, so check that out. But we are here to talk Raw, and the other voice you hear on the show is Mauricio Pomares. Did I say that pretty close? I'm a little out of practice. It's been a couple months.
Yeah, close enough.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a win. Yeah, welcome back. Yeah. Welcome back, Mauricio.
Thanks for having me again.
Yes, good to have you here. You cover Raw in written format with TV reports at pwtorch.com, right alongside my reports every Monday night, so people get two perspectives. Sometimes there's something I miss, and you cover it, and vice versa. So we always like to have two reports up for major shows, major TV events, and pay-per-views when we can, and it's been great having your perspective on the show. You are an ardent fan with a great knowledge of history and a really good analytical mind. And I always enjoy your analysis paragraphs in your raw reports to compare what you think of segments of matches to what I think. And it's also great having you on to vocalize them. So welcome back to the call here.
Thanks for having me. Like you said, it's been a while.
Yes. Very good. All right. So the phone number, if you want to participate in the show, is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. If you want to be on the show, that'll flag you on our switchboard, and then we can bring you on, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from first-time callers and our regulars. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's get rolling with our first call today, and that will be Ian in Tennessee, and then William in San Diego, you're on deck, so hold tight. Ian. Welcome. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
So my first point of Raw was I thought the end promo was very good by Cody. And I was actually thinking about it before Raw started. I was thinking, are they going to wait until Raw to announce the fifth member, or were they going to wait till Survivor Series? And then I was thinking, you know, of how Chicago crowds get, you know, and when they get the thought of CM Punk in their head, anyone who they brought out was probably going to get a negative crowd reaction. Do you think that played a factor in them saying, now we'll just announce at the end of the show who the fifth member is?
Mauricio, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, that's probably the main reason why they essentially told the fans, yeah, it's Randy Orton. Don't think of anyone else. I think if CM Punk was still with AEW, if nothing had ever happened there and he was still all Elite, I think they would have kept Randy Orton as a surprise, because who else could have? It would have been a cool surprise to have him just show up without. I mean, there would have still been a speculation, but with no formal announcement, it would have made for a cool moment.
Yeah, I think people had a pretty good idea it was going to be Randy, but I'm not sure. Ian, what do you think the crowd reaction? To me, I think there's some negativity about CM Punk. We ran a poll, and I'm kind of processing that too, where most people would like to see, in our Twitter poll, most people would like to see Punk return to WWE. But I think people right now, WWE fans, like Randy enough, where I don't know that there'd be a big contingent, even in Chicago, of fans going crazy for CM Punk right now. I mean, I think fans are WWE fans right now who are fans of WWE more than they are CM Punk fans, and I think Randy Orton's a bigger star than CM Punk. I'm not saying by far or with everyone, but I just think Randy's a really good get, and I think fans are going to be really excited to see him. But had they not revealed it until the match, you know, yeah, there could have been some, you know, some CM Punk chance that gained some momentum. But I think this was the right way to handle it. Ian, back to you.
Well, you know, to answer your question, you know, when I was looking, Randy hasn't been seen on WWE since, I think it was May. It was after Backlash of 2022. So it's been low close to 2 years. And, I've missed seeing Randy. So I think it probably would have been, you know, maybe 70-30, you know, a little disappointment that it wasn't Punk, but excited to see Randy back. But, you know, even, you know, my brother was saying, you know, it could have been LA Knight and people thinking it was Punk, you know, they probably might have booed LA Knight, because that was another person I was thinking of. If Randy's not fully cleared until probably not to Royal Rumble, I thought it was going to be LA Knight. Was that a possibility that you guys were thinking because Cody's showing up on SmackDown?
Yeah. I think it's a fair consideration and it crossed my mind. But I think it would have made sense. But I think people are happy enough with Randy. There's not going to be – I don't think people are going to be disappointed because LA Knight's getting such a good push too. But, yeah, Cody showing up on SmackDown, you know, and being there for LA and sharing the ring with him, even though they weren't best buds in their body language, you know, rightfully led to some speculation. Mauricio, how about you?
No, I mean, I do agree. Like, Randy – like even if they didn't announce it in the show, and even if the crowd in Chicago were going CM Punk, I think they would have still popped really hard for Randy Orton making his return without prior announcement. They would have been obviously that portion of the fan base that would be annoyed that CM Punk didn't return, even though the company never teased it or anything. Like you said, Randy Orton, he would have gotten a pop just loud enough to make the crowd forget that CM Punk didn't return, because Randy Orton hasn't been seen in over a year, so people are probably just miss him.
Agreed. Ian, back to you.
Yeah, in Wade, your earlier point when you were talking about what they would do with Randy, it's probably, Drew is going to stick with Jay probably till Royal Rumble maybe. Is there a possibility, and it's very slim, do you see Randy possibly feuding with like a Dominic Mysterio, saying like, I've been in the ring with your father, 20 plus years, you're disrespecting him, it's time I get revenge for him. Where do you see, Randy going? Because I don't see him possibly turning on Cody. I'm sure a lot of fans would like to see a Cody-Randy feud down the line. But where do you see Randy going after the match?
Yeah, I mean, if Randy stays babyface, and I think he will, but it's Randy and it's, like I made the case for it. I mean, I don't think Randy and Cody is a bad feud to occupy Cody and keep people's interest during the bridge before Cody presumably gets a match against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania next year. Randy against Dominic, I think, would be a lot of fun. I mean, there's no question. Dominic's risen, and I think people would really enjoy the dynamic of Randy. Just Randy looking at Dominic as Dominic is Dominic, I think fans would just be glued to the screen. They'd be staring at how Randy would react to this punk-ass kid. And I think there's a lot Randy could say about what Dominic's been up to and how he acts right in front of him, that would get fans super worked up to see Randy give him an RKO. So, Mauricio, what do you think of that as a possible feud? And what other ones jump out? I mean, there's Judgment Day, but there's possible matchups that feel fresh beyond that, singles and tag team.
No, I can totally see it. I just can picture Randy and Dominic just having this face-off and the crowd going nuts just because they hate Dominic so much. It could be a really good choice. Other names that I thought could be like possible feuds for Randy. I mean, the obvious one is another from Judgment Day, like Damian Priest. Just maybe that would be a feud that Priest could win as Mr. Money in the Bank, because we're assuming he'll eventually get the world titles. So it would be a good feud for Priest to have. Outside of Judgment Day, Shinsuke Nakamura has been doing these promos for a few weeks, and a lot of people thought maybe it's going to be Randy Orton. I mean, it could still be. He gets revealed who his target is. And aside from that, I wouldn't hate Randy versus Gunther. It would be a cool name for Gunther to defeat.
Yeah, I'd really like to see that too. Ian, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I was glad he brought up Gunther, because that was actually my next point. It was kind of interesting the way they took the face-to-face with Miz, basically saying, he's been bullied and Gunther's going to be like a bully to him. It's tough because, I want to see, Gunther lose the belt, but I can't really picture Miz beating him unless, Miz does what he did today on Raw, which is, go low and cheat to win. Where do you see, this match going at Survivor Series?
Well, I don't want to, say that decoding WWE announcer language qualifies as spoilers 100% of the time. But Cole at the end said, say what you will about Miz, but he is a proud, proud man, and he will go toe-to-toe with Gunther no matter what the cost Saturday. That is not framing it as Miz will do whatever it takes to win, or Miz is going to make all those kids who have been bullied proud by ending the reign of Gunther. I mean, he didn't even go there. Now you could say, well, you don't want to go there. That'd be giving it away. If they planned it, they would use more soft language. But I thought Cole's sentence there and I don't think it's by accident, came across as setting up Miz to get a moral victory by just fighting back and standing toe-to-toe and get scoring some near falls and maybe Gunther having to cheat to win or just put in a lot more work and show at different times in the match frustration and vulnerability that we haven't seen before. I do not see Miz winning. I don't think you want Miz at this stage of his career with the role that he's in, being the guy to end the longest running IC title reign ever. That said, I thought they did a really good job with this promo. You know, Miz's babyface character is kind of cheesy, but it's also kind of relatable for kids who got picked on and are just big wrestling fans. I mean, they've really reframed Miz, I think, smartly, and it remains to be seen if it's successfully, because I don't think the crowd's just going completely nuts for him. But I think they're on a path to kind of forging fans' attitudes to shift in terms of how they see Miz. And I think some are on board, some are open to it and waiting, and others will understandably be resistant. But having Miz be the super fan who faced bullying rings true, because all the JBL stuff and everyone else, Bob Holly and other stuff backstage when he first arrived, and having Gunther kind of, you know, remind us of that and then act that way, the way he did towards Miz, you know, shoving him and pie-facing him. I thought it was really well done. Mauricio, what do you think?
I will agree that the Miz and Gunther did really perform really well. It was a hot promo. The crowd was very into the promo. Like they were cheering for Miz very loudly. Having said that, this promo didn't do anything for me. I had a very one of my the issues I had with Miz with the Miz promo is. At what point he called out Gunther for lacking charisma? And like, that's a good point. But the first thing that came back to mind is like, Miz, you told that to Daniel Bryan when you were facing. Like, it really annoyed me. And then he said he adapts all the time. And I'm thinking, Miz, you've been doing this character for years. This is the first character change you've had in nearly a decade. And then the crowd started chanting USA, and I'm like, USA chants are some of the most annoying to me.
Yeah.
They're like, is USA what? And we want tables. There are like three of the most annoying chants the crowds can make. Yeah.
Yeah. I rolled my eyes at that. The USA chant just was like that. It just didn't feel like it really applied to the situation. It's like, you don't dislike Gunther because he's not from the USA. You dislike him for other reasons, and the crowd just wanted to chant something. But, yeah, I do not blame you, and I was with you on thinking that wasn't great. Now, I'm not going to blame Miz and Gunther for the USA chant, but I do think, we can blame the fans for it, because I don't think they were going for a USA chant. But I thought Gunther, called that the smallest form of some sort of self-identification. And I thought he winged it pretty well when that chant happened. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe they started piping in a USA chant, and that's what they wanted, and then I would be critical of them. But short of that, I think it was just a crowd doing it. I won't blame them. But you're right. That promo is not without controversy, and it moved into meta zone a little bit. And I didn't love that part of it, but it didn't aggravate me in the way that some other kind of meta promos do. And because Gunther's it matches Gunther's gimmick that he's an old school respect the canvas, respect the sacred ring character who clearly doesn't have a lot of color and bombast. He is an all business straightforward suit wearing trunks and boots wrestler. And Miz is bombastic and colorful and as a heel, obnoxious and talking about Hollywood and having all this personality. And I think it's okay, just as happens in USC, to have somebody who is a fighter, but also adds bombast and color and a character to their act. That's fine. That's part of the showmanship of pro wrestling. And I think Miz is just saying, the only thing you have, Gunther, is a winning streak, because without it, if you aren't dominating with that title, there's nothing about you that this company's going to want to back. So when I take that title from you, you're going to lose everything that makes you worth even putting on television. Like, I, I think that's what they were going for, and I think they pulled it off enough for me, even though I am, as you know, predisposed to not liking anything that goes into the territory of talking about gimmicks mattering or promo skills mattering, whether you win or lose. But I thought what this was is Miz saying, when I take away your winning streak, Gunther, you got nothing left. Whereas for me, I can entertain as a talk show host, even if I've got a losing streak. You know, that's kind of, I think, what Miz was getting at. I'm Mauricio, what do you think of that? And then I'll go back to Ian.
I mean, I can't say that, once again, there is a story here that works, that to present the Miz as the good part of entertainment. And it kind of works. And if anything, the story they lean into, that Gunther is a bully, It really works when taking account Miz's real life story of being hazed by the WWE locker room. The problem is I think I can't remember the last time they referenced this. It's kind of weird because they, by turning Miz babyface after being healed for so long and doing it so suddenly, they've reframed so much of his backstory just to be like a baby face now, and it's a bit too much of a whiplash for me. I just look at Miz and I think you're just a heel, you're just a low mid card. I look at his last three matches. His last two matches were competitive matches. Prior to that, he was squashed in a singles match. I'm thinking, where did this turn come from? Why did this happen? And I'm trying to move past that bit to get invested in the storyline, and I really can't.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, it does feel like a sharp, sudden turn. But Gunther, I think, with his performance, is really helping, like I said, kind of forge a recalibration in the fan base in how they look at Miz. But there's a cheesiness to it. And like I said, it is a work in progress. It wasn't instant. Fans were not itching to cheer Miz. Like, that was not a thing that they just flipped a switch on and now everyone finally has permission to cheer a guy that they love. So they're putting in the work. But I think this worked. I mean, I think what Miz is doing is kind of what MJF is doing in AEW. You know, the just obnoxious heel who's now rallying the fans behind him. And it feels, I think this outfit fits Miz a little more comfortably than it does MJF, this approach to a character shift. Because Miz is such a company guy, and I think the idea is he's paid his dues and put in the work. And I think it helps that Cole is acting not skeptical, but acknowledging, you know, saying, say what you will about Miz. But, and then he adds a compliment. They're like with Drew, they're taking fans on a journey to booing a guy they like. They're also trying to build that case brick by brick for why maybe Miz is at a different stage and people should recalibrate how they feel about him. Ian, what are your thoughts on this discussion?
Yeah, you know, the whole, you know, Miz, you know, I think it was a few weeks ago, Miz getting Gunther on Miz TV kind of was just like, oh, you know, talk about his, you know, what's next for Gunther. And then they just started the whole random Miz feud, Miz winning the Fatal 4-Way where, you know, Ricochet got concussed and Ricochet, you know, goofing up the finish. And then, you know, Miz like, you know, I'm going to be, you know, a 9-time Intercontinental Champion. And part of me wants Miz to win. It's probably just like a thank you to Miz and, you know, get Gunther going to the main event level. We'll see where that goes. But my final point is, you know, going back to Judgment Day, do you think this is where, you know, Drew maybe joins Judgment Day, slowly pushes Damian out of Judgment Day, and then where do you, you know, my question is, where do you see that going? Do you think Drew is pushing Damian out of Judgment Day for Damian to, you know, go do other things? Where do you see Judgment Day going in the future?
Mauricio, what do you think?
For Judgment Day, I don't think Drew is going to replace Damian Priest. I think after War Games, win or lose, he'll focus on feuding with Jey Uso and maybe Cody Rhodes. But I'm assuming Judgment Day loses, I think they'll lean heavily into a breakup storyline. I don't know where it would go, when it's going to pay off. I'm assuming WrestleMania because we are pretty close to it. But I think that's going to be the road to WrestleMania, like the slow breakup of Judgment Day. Probably, I'm thinking maybe Damian Priest versus Finn Balor at WrestleMania. That could be like the big match to officially break this group.
Yeah, Priest being the leader of War Games and then coming up short doesn't mean that Drew's going to join the Judgment Day. I don't think he should. I like him as a lone wolf type guy. But it's weird to imagine Judgment Day without Priest because he does, even if there isn't a leader and they've all kind of had their moments. Well, I don't know if Drew and JD have, but Balor to a degree, and he's led factions before. And then Rhea Ripley and Priest all have. I don't know where that leaves Judgment Day as a group if Priest isn't part of it and he turns babyface. And I'm not sure they've done enough to lay the groundwork, for Priest to be embraced by fans if he turns babyface. Plus, I don't think you want to do too many turns at once. So I could see this stretching out for quite a while, where they're in no hurry. They want to tell the story of internal strife and political maneuvering. But I could see this stretching to the Royal Rumble at least before there's anything kind of definitive that happens, but with a pivot point that accelerates some of the issues behind the scenes with them happening at War Games, especially if Randy stays babyface and loyal and they just get a win, and if Priest takes the fall or is responsible in some way for, JD or Dom taking the fall, then that can lead to a lot of finger-pointing and arguing. But I don't know that there necessarily has to be a breakup or a separation too quickly. Ian, follow up on that, anything else on that matter that Mauricio or I did cover?
Well, I'm not saying like it has to be like a sudden thing, but it was kind of interesting, Damian saying, I'm the leader of the team and you didn't even tell me about Drew, and starting that little dissension, and it's obvious, Drew's not gonna like fully join. He could be well, if I need help, I got Judgment Day with me. I made a deal with Rhea. And, sticking to the whole Judgment Day, in my personal opinion, I don't think Damian needs Judgment Day anymore. I think he's kind of risen to that level. And, he's still Money in the Bank, and they could easily, start the dissension by saying, having Damian say, Dom, go do this, and it backfires, and Dom gets the pinfall, and then there's a goof up with the cash in, which I still think they'll do with that. But the final point is, I don't think Damian wins the world championship with the briefcase. I think either JD or Finn or even Dom, for that matter, might goof that up. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Mauricio, any thoughts on that? Rachel, are you there?
Sorry, I accidentally turned off my mic.
Oh, no problem. Go ahead if you heard what he said.
I get the idea that Damian Priest doesn't need the Judgment Day anymore. I don't think he's quite there yet. Maybe as a heel, he could be a heel on his own, but I'm assuming the long-term plan is for Damian Priest to turn babyface. I don't know when that will happen. That I think whenever Judgment Day breaks up, I'm assuming that Damian is going to get kicked out of the group. I don't think Judgment Day is going to fully break up. They just get rid of Priest.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, assuming Judgment Day loses because of Damian Priest at Survivor Series, I could see maybe Damian Priest accidentally once again calls his team the Royal Rumble match, and maybe you do the turn around the Elimination Chamber where Judgment Day, led by Rhea Ripley, kicks Damian Priest out of the group. At least that's how I see it.
It's tough to be a red hot babyface if you're a heel who gets kicked out of your heel group by other heels when you wanted to still be with them. That's the challenge, and the Money in the Bank obviously plays a factor in this, and it's intriguing, and there's a number of ways that they can go with this, but I don't think if you want Priest to come out of Judgment Day with momentum that he should be kicked out. I think he needs to quit or just have a mutual breakup. That would be a concern. So, you know, it's the go-to example in the authority when Stephanie Hunter dumped Seth, and then Seth went crawling, you know, begging back to the fans, going, "I'm sorry, but since they won't like me, will you? Since they won't have me, will you?" And I don't think that's, I think that hurt Seth's momentum, among other things, after that happened. In fact, if we didn't cover anything you brought up, then throw it back at us too.
No, but it reminded me, could it be more like what happened with Randy Orton in Evolution in 2004, where, you know, Triple H kicked Randy Orton out, and then that's when Randy became a babyface?
But is getting kicked out of a group by heels the best way to become a babyface? Because my point is that if you're saying, "Hey, fans, cheer me now because I didn't want – you're my second choice, but my first choice doesn't want to have anything to do with me." I mean, I just don't think that's a momentum generator.
No, and that's fair, but basically what I was trying to say is, you know, Randy getting kicked out turned him babyface, and maybe that's what Triple H wanted to do with Damian, have them kick him out, and then, you know, maybe be like the sympathy babyface where they, like, fans feel bad and kind of go that way.
Yeah, I mean, Mauricio, do you think that can work if it's framed right with the right approach, or do you think it's to have, again, part of it too is I just don't know if Damian Priest is the right person for that situation. To me, that the deep voiced, you know, leadership type A alpha qualities he has, it doesn't work well if he's dumped and then having to try to, you know, scratch and claw his way back to being embraced or cheered by some group, whether it's fans or other baby faces. Mauricio, your thoughts?
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more holes I see in this idea. And you mentioned that Randy Orton being turned by Evolution in like 2004, I think it was. But I don't remember Randy Orton being. I mean, he turned babyface, but I don't remember he gaining a lot of momentum out of that storyline. It didn't help that he lost the title like the next month after that, but that's besides the point. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Damian Priest, they would have to work on him, on giving him babyface qualities before, like the months before the turn. Like, assuming it happens like Elimination Chamber, they would need to work December, January to give him babyface qualities. Because one of the reasons I think they would want Damian Priest to be a babyface is because I go back to his main roster call-up. What did he do? They paired him with Bad Bunny. And I'm thinking maybe that's a reason they would want Damian Priest to be a babyface, to keep, maybe to eventually reform that group, to maybe put these very popular musician that loves wrestling with the cool guy that they are more Puerto Rican, to reform that union once again. At least that's a point that I could see them going back in the future. But yeah, the more I think about it, Priest being kicked out of the group, it's a bit of a hard sell as to a babyface turn.
All right, Ian, anything else?
No, I'm going to let you guys get into other callers. I probably took a lot of time, but you all have a great night.
Yes, you too. Thank you, Ian. Great having you on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Our number, if you want to get in line, is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from you. Push one when you call if you want to be on the show. We'll go to William in San Diego next. William, welcome. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Good talking to y'all. I wanted to, go back to the first segment, to the opening segment with Drew and Jey Uso, and shift the attention over to Jey and ask about how you think he did coming out. Because, you know, with Drew, I think this comes up every week, but there's always something. You know, in his promos, he usually brings up at least one thing that you, like, nod your head and go along, like, yep, I understand where he's coming from, where you sympathize with him. And to me, he mentioned how he never, like, received an apology from Jey when he came in, and, you know, and that was, like, I kind of nodded along the way. Like, yeah, Jay just kind of came in and kind of expected Drew to be okay with everything, and Drew was just supposed to get over it and go along with it. And I don't know, maybe my memory is fuzzy, but I don't remember an apology as well. And Jay came in and kind of like acted, you know, a little cocky and was doing like the whole yeast thing and being kind of goofy in a way, and dismissive of the points that Drew was making. And, you know, that just made me get more on Drew's side in that case. But yeah, what do you guys think about that?
Mauricio, what do you think?
I do see the point. I mean, Drew McIntyre cost Jey Uso the tag titles a week ago, and I think he should have been a bit more serious. I get why they keep doing the Jeet thing. It's classic WWE overplaying this thing that is popular. But yeah, I think I like Jey Uso, but sometimes I think he could be a bit more serious, like he was during the Roman Reigns feud. Once he came out, I was thinking, yeah, Drew should be dropped. You deserve it. How about you, Wade?
Whoops, go ahead, Wayne.
I think that's what I would have wanted to see from Jay. You know, maybe, like I said, if I'm misremembering, and there was actually an apology or an attempt at an apology, he could have said something like, hey, what are you talking about? Like, I tried to apologize, or I tried my best to, get along with you, be on the same page with you, but you just, like, you won't have it, and kind of turned that to the table or turned the issue around on Drew.
It would be a good detail to fill in, because I don't think they have in any context that I can remember, and it would take away some of, if not all of, well, not all of, but it would take away a good bit of, it would give more power to the argument that Drew needs to move on and get over it, if you could go, because Jay has apologized and clearly he's a changed man, and stuff like that happens, and everybody else who it happens to. They make their case, but then they fight their way back, kind of like what LA Knight is saying. He pointed out, hey, if it weren't for Jimmy, I'd be champion right now. He says that, and then he's like, but I'll be back. I'm going to re-earn a title shot. And, you know, fair, unfair, right or wrong in pro wrestling, if you get screwed out of a title shot, you don't always have an authority figure who goes, well, that wasn't fair, so let's give you another chance. That doesn't happen. So, you know, within the structure – and kind of the rules of engagement of how management interacts with wrestlers, the thing to do is not what Drew is doing, which is getting to the point of just talking incessantly about how he was wronged, as opposed to the LA Knight approach, which is acknowledge he was wronged and then move on and fight another day. William?
Yeah, 100% agree with all that. Just would have liked to see a little bit more of that. Moving on to another topic, I'm really excited about, you know, like everyone else, about Randy Orton coming in, and I guess this is kind of a hypothetical or, you know, a what-if scenario, whatever you want to call it, but I'm just, I think there's a really great story to be told there with the Bloodline and Randy Orton, you know, them being the ones who took him out for a year and a half, almost 2 years, and some unfinished business there with Roman and just a lot of personal stuff there with, you know, Randy could go into like how he had to miss all this time, how, I don't know if Dave would even want to bring him up, but how, you know, Riddle was struggling on his own and Randy couldn't be there for him and you know, a lot of stuff like that. And I'm just looking forward to, you know, thinking forward to WrestleMania, and I'm thinking like that's, for me personally, that's probably the match that I would prefer to see over Cody and a Roman rematch. So, you know, I guess a what-if scenario, if Triple H came in and they said, you know, we want Roman coming out of WrestleMania as a champion because we want him to, you know, beat the record set by Hogan or whatever. So no matter what, he's coming out of there as a champion. Would you pivot to Randy and Roman? Would you still do the Cody and Roman rematch, even if it meant that Cody lost again, or you know, C option where you just tell Triple H, like, no, screw it, like, you really got to, this is Cody's time, like, you really got to give him the win. It's time.
Wow. I mean, those are big topics. I am not ready to say that Randy is ready to main event WrestleMania as the guy fans would believe would end Roman Reigns' stint, even though there's a history there that you laid out, William, you know, where you could create a storyline. Let's say Cody went down with a torn Achilles and was going to be out for 9 months. I think that's a good backup story to tell. He's, you know, you're Josh Dobbs, and it might be exciting. But I don't know that you want to go there by choice, because at some point, if you don't give Cody the belt, I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't comparable here. But when the Road Warriors and Jim Crockett Promotions were supposed, you know, the fans were really behind them and they wanted them to win the tag titles. And when they got screwed in Chicago, it really hurt. And it took the momentum away, and fans were like, screw it, you know. And fans felt that way with Hulk Hogan in the AWA when Hulkamania was born pre-WWF. And he one night he won the title and celebrated with the belt, and the fans celebrated, went out drinking and partying. And then they announced on TV afterwards, Lord James Blair, special referee, got knocked into, and he hadn't had a chance to officially disqualify Nick Bockwinkel yet, but titles don't get a chance in the DQ. And it took the wind out of sales of fans, because they got to celebrate a victory and then they got screwed over booking wise because Vern Gagne, the promoter, didn't want to give Hogan the belt. There's wrestling has a whole history of waiting too long at a top level, and fans love Cody. And I think Cody's the right guy to win, and it might be the right time at WrestleMania next year, but I think they're going to be tempted not to, and they're going to be tempted to have Reigns somehow hold on longer, but it's going to come at the risk of sacrificing how fans feel about Cody right now. And if Cody doesn't win at WrestleMania next year, I think the meta message to a big part of the fan base, and there's a whole other fans who don't think meta, but the meta message is, thanks for cheering him. He's done a great job, but we don't quite see him as a top guy, or we would have booked him to win. And that's where fans stop supporting him in the same way. They support him in a different way. And then the actual, you know, just more casual fans who don't think in the meta sense about management making choices, they're just going to think Cody came up short again and be looking around for someone else to cheer, or just tuning out because they're so frustrated. So there's risk there, and that could also work against Randy if it seems like Randy's taking something away from Cody. Mauricio, I want to get your thoughts on the scenario and the choices and the options.
Randy Orton, I could see Randy Orton challenging Roman Reigns for the title. Maybe do that at Royal Rumble, Royal Elimination Chamber. But him being the one to defeat Roman Reigns, that really doesn't hit for me. One thing about the Roman Reigns reign, that incredibly lengthy title reign that I think should happen regardless of who takes it, is that whoever beats Roman Reigns, that it should make this whoever beats Roman Reigns should be the guy. He should be big. You should create a new star out of being Roman Reigns. And Kurov is a top star. But the fact that he has yet to win the world title, that I think that's the final push that would make him the top guy. And that's why, like, having someone, I think people cheer for, like, having Sami Zayn or having LA Knight be the guys to beat him, because Even if the chances of them winning were low, they knew that. But if they beat Roman Reigns, they would become the guy in WWE. And I think it would be a bit of a waste to just have Roman Reigns' historic, legendary title reign come to an end to a guy that has had the title so many times in the past before, that doesn't really need to have another title reign. It would be a fun match to do on the road to WrestleMania, but Randy doesn't really feel like the choice to take Roman's belt.
All right, William, back to you.
Yeah, kind of related to on the Randy topic. I think maybe you may have mentioned it, but I missed it. But did you guys notice how at the very end when Cody announced that Randy would be the one coming in, everyone was celebrating except Jay. He looked kind of worried and kind of like, almost like he was seeing a ghost, even though Randy wasn't there, but almost like he was seeing a ghost. And I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, and maybe he was just selling the beatdown that he had just taken, but that was the idea in the sense that I got by looking at him. Like, he just looked like, oh my God, like another, we got to, this guy's going to want to kill me as soon as he gets in that match.
I didn't notice, but now I want to go back and watch and kind of give my interpretation of it. Obviously that's there. I mean, it's the issue. They've told the story, and perhaps with this moment in mind. I mean, I could have imagined them going, hey, when Randy comes back, he's going to be one of those people who's not happy to see Jay being cheered and trying to, you know, restore his reputation without paying a price first. And so that is a card that they can play. But again, I mean, the fans like Randy, but they really like Jay right now. And I don't know if fans want that. Want to have to choose between them, especially if Randy makes as good of a case as Drew has. So it's a difficult situation to get right if they want to go that way. But if nothing else, they can address it, and maybe that's where Jay apologizes and Randy accepts it, and Randy shows how you deal with someone who wronged you as a way to contrast how Drew is handling it. And maybe that helps solidify Drew's turn because Randy holds Jay accountable. But in a different way than Drew is, and does so in a way where fans, you know, respect it more. Mauricio, what do you think?
I did see like Jay's face at the end of the show. I think Jay and Randy would be a key element that will impact the match at Survivor Series. The more I think about it, I think Randy will remain babyface. And I think they will tease Randy turning on Jay. But I think what will happen, Randy is going to remain loyal to his team, maybe do this, like, give Cody Rhodes a favor. Like, I did this for Cody Rhodes, and after that, and afterward, where he goes, Jay, we have unfinished business. Because I think that would be the road to go. Because, they wouldn't in cabin. I saw the face at the end of the show. And it felt very purposeful, like they included this as part of the show because it will play a part in the future. I think both Randy and Jay will remain babyface, and it will be like they will solve this like in a babyface versus babyface match. That's kind of it.
Yeah. All right, William, back to you.
Moving on to the women's division. I think it was last week someone called in and mentioned how, you know, maybe a lot, some of the popularity that Becky has lost is due to her promos, her delivery, her cadence, whatever you want to call it. And I guess I'm, you know, kind of defending her a little bit in here and saying that I think it's as simple as, you know, she really hasn't had a ton to do in the last year. You know, it's been small fish here and there with Sia Lee, Indy Hartwell, and, you know, others. She had that short NXT run, but I don't know how many people on the main roster actually, viewers of the main roster actually care about that kind of stuff. And then she had that Trish Stratus feud that went on for what felt like 7 years, and before that she had the feud with Damage Control that felt like it went for even longer, like 20 years or whatever. But I guess as a counter argument, I would enter into evidence. Like a couple of weeks ago, she had this little interaction with Nia Jax backstage where she basically said something like, you know, after that punch, I went on to main event WrestleMania and you got fired. And that was probably the most attention I've seen Becky get online in months, in a long while. So I think people are just waiting for something big from her. Yeah, well, you know, whether that's the eventual Rhea match coming at WrestleMania or something else, I feel like, and I think you even saw it tonight a little bit, like, I think, it's, you know, to her credit, I don't think there's a lot of people who would have gotten a decent reaction in a kind of a throwaway, you know, mini feud, I guess, match against someone who's not as established as someone like Xia Li.
Mauricio, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, but Becky Lynch has been doing in this position, like, where she's, I think, after WrestleMania, after Rhea Ripley won the title, they realized they wanted to do Becky versus Rhea, and they didn't want to do it at SummerSlam, so they've been they've kept Becky busy with other stuff just to keep her on, to keep her apart from Rhea. Yeah, just so we can wait until they do WrestleMania. I think that's they made it very clear that that's the WrestleMania program, and I would have liked Frankie to do more stuff in between. Like you said, the Trish Stratus feuds went way too long. That should have ended at SummerSlam. I don't know why they did it at Payback. And I did like the NXT title run she got. It kind of felt like having a mid-card women's titles, which on Raw, which was fun. This match with Xia Li, it was good.
It was good, yeah.
It was good. I think it would have been better if Xia had more of a showcase over the past few weeks, because she had squash matches, which were good for her, but the crowd didn't really know her offense because she didn't really get to wrestle nearly as much. But like you said, Becky Lynch is probably, the more I think about it, she's probably the most reliable wrestler in the women's division. They have the one that they have faced Tegan Nox, Indy Hartwell, Xia Li, and that will keep her strong. But adding her to War Games felt like a bit random, but once again, I think they are keeping the plates spinning until we have this Rhea Ripley feud on the road to WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, Rhea Ripley's the key. I mean, they're building them up on parallel tracks, and you know, having Becky in War Games be there for other, you know, for not even friends, but just people who she shares a common cause or common enemies, and just putting her in a high profile situation. It could just be basically they wanted to add her star power to the match and not have her be anywhere but a key match on another paper, a PLE. I don't think you want Becky to be excluded from being in significant matches too often on these PLEs. So maybe that's just part of the motivation here, and it won't be any big deal. She'll just be a player in the match, and there won't be a big angle or anything. But it is a match where there's plenty of room to set things up if they want to, either for now or to use them as callbacks when the rosters are realigned again. But to me, I'm trying to think if there's a match that feels bigger, because I don't want to jump too far ahead with Jade Cargill right now, given how limited her TV exposure has been in WWE and how green she is. And, you know, we just have to see more. But there's a lot we've seen that's good and promising. But to me, like, the biggest match right now feels in the women's division feels like Becky and Rhea, more so than anything with Charlotte or Bianca or Bayley or whoever. William, back to you. Any response to anything we had to say?
Yeah. And I think to add to that, I think, Becky and Rhea are in a way kind of a little bit of, you know, two sides of the same coin, in that Rhea is facing a problem where there's not a lot of credible or any other than Becky. Any baby faces who aren't, you know, a credible threat to her title. And Becky is kind of facing the opposite problem, where there's not really any credible heels or even interesting heels there for her other than Rhea. So it just feels like a match waiting to happen for the two of them in a way. But kind of related to that, I do think they've been doing a better job, or at least making more of an effort in recent weeks to at least build a little bit more of a credible division on Raw. You know, we had like the five-way match at Crown Jewel, and you know, say what you will about those multi-person matches, how weird and awkward they can be, but you know, it did feel like they were trying to build up multiple women in there, and it still feels like, you know, they're trying. Tonight, I was really impressed by the amount of, you know, time they gave to the women. Like, I think there were like three matches there with Nia and Raquel, and obviously the Becky match and the tag team matches. It just feels like there's been more of an effort recently. Have you guys noticed that?
Mauricio, what did you think of the four-way tag match? And what did you think of Chelsea Green and Piper Niven tonight? I am enjoying Piper Niven playing off of Chelsea Green in a way that I was not expecting to.
No, yeah, I think Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, it's unfortunate that Sonya Deville had to vacate the belts because of the injury, but they did a really good job, like, establishing themselves as a proper tag team. I think it's taking a bit, but it's really working. As for Activision, it's so weird that this show did a better job establishing the women's tag division than the first same four-way match they had at WrestleMania, such a big stage. And I think this match did so much more for the women's tag division. I can't remember the last time WWE had so many women's tag teams. For a while, the joke was that there were two tag teams in the division. Everything else was thrown together teams. I mean, some of these teams are kind of thrown together, but I think they'll eventually become permanent teams. I think it's good that these tag titles that have been cursed are in an actual feud for once.
William, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with Mauricio there. I do feel like they did as good a job of building this kind of last-minute tag team matches as they could have done. And, you know, even like going back last week, they were setting up that tag team between Maxine and I forget her name, but the woman from the Creed Brothers. You know, they had a kind of a little bit of a thing backstage. So, I think they're, you know, slowly but surely, I think they're doing a little bit more of a better job establishing different women in the division. Another smaller thing, going back to the other segment where they set up a multi-tag team match thing for next week, did I miss something? What was that interaction between Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce? Like, what did they hint at what they needed to talk about, or is it being left ambiguous? Like, what do you guys think that's about?
Yeah, I rewound like five times trying to get the exact words that Pierce said to the assistant that led to Nick Aldis suddenly showing up out of the blue and going, no need to do that, I'm here, but we'll talk. Is it just as simple as Orton is supposed to... Well, it wouldn't have been Orton related because of roster, because that wasn't established yet. So yeah, Mauricio, did it jump out to you what they were talking about? I hadn't thought about it since I just rewound it a couple times trying to get the wording right.
No, I don't remember quite well. I just remember Nick Aldis just showing up to talk with Adam Pearce and we never saw them again. I don't know. I'm not sure what they are doing with this feud because in other years, having the general managers have a feud would eventually lead like the Survivor Series and the Raw versus SmackDown. But that's not going to happen with just when Survivor Series is this weekend. So I'm thinking they'll do some kind of maybe like a WrestleMania thing, match like a huge maybe 8, 10, 12 man tag match. Kind of like they did in 2012. I remember they did Team Laurinaitis versus Team Long. I could see them doing something like that.
Yeah, so fill out the card with an elimination style, traditional Survivor Series, brand versus brand match.
Yeah, it could be a cool idea. It's kind of weird because it's been a while since they've done the general manager feuds.
Yeah.
So it could be a cool spot to fill in the card if they don't want to do the Battle Royale on the WrestleMania card.
Yeah, I could see that. William, does that seem consistent with what we saw? And do you have any other theories?
Well, because he came immediately after he made the match official, to use his phrase, or catchphrase. My speculation is that it might be related to maybe the tag team titles, maybe, you know, wanting to separate them. Because I think some of the concern or what the New Day and the other tag teams were griping about is like, you know, the women have a shot, but we don't have a shot. And it kind of ties into, I guess, in a way, the fact that last week we saw a match where they determined the number one contender for the tag titles on SmackDown. But we really haven't gotten anything like that for the men on Raw. So maybe, I don't know, maybe like Pierce's wheel started spinning and he thought maybe it's time to separate the title so that, you know, everyone can be happy or something. I wouldn't, you know, advocate for that. I think I like the floating championships for the tag team titles just as they are. But, yeah, I think maybe it might be related to that.
Sure. Yeah, William, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I guess just one quick thing. What do you guys think about what they're doing with Ludwig? It feels like they're trying to establish him as a solo guy, you know, giving him a little bit of a, maybe, I don't know, like a bit of a gripe with the way Gunther is treating him. Yeah, if the end goal is for him to be a babyface, I'm not really sure that this, you know, him being a little petty about what's going on with Giovanni is really going to get him there. But, you know, this whole thing is just starting, so I'm not even really sure exactly where they're going. But yeah, what do you guys think about that?
I still think Kaiser, they're feeling out whether they can do more with him than they initially imagined when he and Vinci were just kind of mid-level, almost jobber tag team, you know, just playing a supporting role to Gunther, kind of like was going on with Legado del Fantasma with the tag team there. So to me, I like what I see. I mean, I think he's impressing people with what he does in the ring. He has a good look. He carries himself as a star. And I think they're the way they're telling the story of Kaiser, you know, yes, he's still heelish. He still wants to sort of dominate and wants to subjugate Vinci. But to have Vinci now have the role reversed and be even more obnoxious about it could put some babyface sympathy from the fans in on Kaiser. And then if Gunther kind of bullies him, I mean, I think it's a good path to Kaiser becoming a standout singles guy. I don't know if he's the right guy to end Gunther's reign, and I don't know if you want to feed him to Gunther to lose, if the idea is we see a future with him. So I'm kind of, you know, picking my words a little carefully while I kind of think about the pace of this, but it does seem to be moving towards, we believe in Kaiser as a rising star, and we want to put him in a position to become that. Mauricio, what are you seeing and what do you think?
I do see that it's clear WWE sees something in Ludwig Kaiser because even when Imperium lose tag matches or trios matches, it was always Vinci that ate the pimples. I'm not sure why they are doing this because, I mean, it's good for Ludwig Kaiser. I think he's really good. But I think they shouldn't focus so hard because I want to see Vinci and Kaiser have at least of a run of as a proper tag team. I don't think they really have explored that part too mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
But I don't think as the more time passes, I think it really feels like Kaiser will leave the group sooner rather than later. But so the way I see this, if they are really going to push Kaiser as a single guy and really commit to it, I don't know where we're going to be like a year from now.
Yeah.
But next year is Bash in Berlin. And that could be a really good spot. I don't know. Let's say Gunther becomes world champion, but by this time last year, like he beats Seth Rollins at some point. That would be a really hot match to book, like Gunther versus Kaiser in a world title match.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you don't want too much calendar booking, but there, you know, when it comes to like gimmick matches and everything kind of comes together perfectly for a gimmick match. But when you go to a region, like happened with, you know, Magic with Sammy in Montreal, Drew for Clash at the Castle, when you can do that or Damian Priest and Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico, yeah, you want a long-term plan for that moment. And if that's what they have in mind, it could still be Gunther as IC champ and guys are trying to unseat him too. There's real potential there. William, back to you. Any reaction to any of that or anything else you want to bring up?
No reaction to that. Just one final thing and I'll let you guys get back to other callers or emailers. I agree with what Mauricio said in the past call. The three most annoying chants are USA, we won tables. That would probably be number one for me, and the what chant. So, yeah, I agree there with you, Mauricio. And that's all I have. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good Thanksgiving week.
Thank you, William. You too. Appreciate it.
Thank,
oh, good
thank
injury.
You.
Very good. All right. I want to hit some other things for all we haven't talked about. But Wayne says, call me crazy, but did we just have a show with all clean finishes for all the matches? Are we not burying the lead, but leaving out so far in our discussion something significant? We had Nia Jax, I thought kind of surprisingly, winning not out of almost out of nowhere against Raquel. It, I mean, it fit the storyline of Jax, you know, Raquel putting up a fight, but Jax being bigger and outpowering her. And then you had, you know, Becky Lynch with a manhandle slam against someone who's getting a title shot the next day on NXT. Talk about a tempting situation to do a shenanigan finish, and they didn't. Gargano Ludwig, I would say, is the one that's most at risk of not being a clean finish because it involved Vinci coming out and Kaiser being distracted by that, leading to the finish. And then Natalya Knox, I think that was clean. That was just Knox rolling through on a body press and getting the win. And then the last one, the main event? Oh, no, Chad Gable and Shinsuke. Yep, so Nakamura getting the clean one there. Yeah, well, he had the exposed turnbuckle. So, again, it wasn't like a traditional distraction finish or foreign object, but Cole was creating a little bit of an excuse. So to call that a clean finish has an asterisk when the announcer is going, well, there was that exposed turnbuckle and Gable had to hold up, and that's what led to the finish. But then you had Drew, you know, getting a future shot clean one on Jay. So, Mauricio, how do you classify those six matches and the two that are a little iffy in terms of how clean they are?
I'm a huge fan of clean finishes. Like it's probably because I've been a fan of WWE for so long. But sometimes, how do I say this? Sometimes just these DQ finishes, like cheating finishes, it kind of gets on my nerves a bit. So this show, it really felt like a bit of a breath of fresh air to just have clean finishes. Nakamura versus Gable, I don't count this as a cheating finish because there wasn't any cheating. Mm-hmm. And the Gargano Kaiser, that felt like a little bit like a cheating finish. But it didn't really annoy me because I was more annoyed by Kaiser and Vinci breaking up than by the finish itself. If anything, Becky versus Saya could have actually had a non-finish because Saya has a title match tomorrow. And the same for Nakamura versus Gable, now that I think about it. They just beat Saya and Gable like a night ahead of their title matches on NXT. I feel like they could have done a better job preparing for that, maybe moving the matches for next week. I don't know.
Okay, let's hit a few other points here, and then I will wrap up. Nia Jax and Raquel Rodriguez. I just mentioned, you know, ran down the matches and mentioned that. How do you think they handled this kind of battle of two people where you could make the case they could have built up to this being a bigger deal as a singles match if you were imagining the way that they were sort of on separate tracks? So for this just to be thrown on, I don't say thrown on TV, but put on TV as an opening match on Raw and to have Jax go over clean, the way that they're building Rodriguez, is that a sign, they kind of realize maybe Rodriguez isn't going to work out or at the level that they were thinking? Or is this just setting up a comeback so when she wins, it seems like a bigger deal, especially given the way that they portrayed her during the match?
I think the plan is for Raquel to eventually get her win back. Yeah, they really tease the idea of Raquel is going to powerbomb Nia, but she fails at the very last moment. So I think the plan is to eventually give Raquel her win back. But coming out of this match, I could see them doing like Nia versus Rhea Ripley in like December or maybe the Rumble. I don't really want to see that match, but I think that's what they could do. If they are giving Nia a clean win over Raquel.
How do you feel about Nia Jax and what they're doing with her overall big picture? Are you watching what they've done with her so far and said they shouldn't have brought her back? Are you watching and thinking, no, she's doing well, she's distinct in her approach with her facial expressions and her ring style and her body type and her gimmick and her attitude and everything. And there's something there to be gotten. And the idea is to, you know, have someone in mind to feed her to ultimately, eventually.
Well, I think they've done as good as a job as they can with Nia Jax since her comeback.
Mm-hmm.
They really limited her time in singles matches, or they have only had her work with the opponents that they really fit her style. Having said that, I didn't really want her to come back. when she came back a few I think it's a month or two ago, I was really deflated because. I don't know. I'm really not a fan of her work.
Yeah.
But so far, she's done fine. She's fine. Like, it would be cool when Rhea Ripley hits her with a Riptide. It would be a cool spot.
Yes. And if they get to that moment, it'll be interesting where Ripley is at that point as a character. So what do you think of the continuation of whatever they're doing with Shinsuke Nakamura and how valuable he can be, having gotten to the world title level, got a rematch, came up short, but then, you know, Cole is still talking about him. I mean, the language they use is, you know, that this is not Nakamura making changing who he is, but revealing who he's always been or returning to who he always was. And it still seems like they're protecting him and setting him up for something significant. And I don't know if that means Randy shifts away from, you know, everything going on at War Games and he's the guy who takes on Nakamura, or if they have something else in mind, or if people are still, if they just want people to speculate about CM Punk. But setting aside the Punk rumor, I guess, just what do you think of Nakamura as they are trying to rehabilitate him following coming up short in the world title situation?
I'm gonna be honest. I think I'm a bit surprised by how protected Nakamura has been since losing to Seth Rollins. Before his match at I think it was Fastlane or Payback, whichever was the second one, he was in this feud with Ricochet at the site. And my thought is Nakamura is going to lose to Seth Rollins, and he'll get back to this Ricochet feud and put over Ricochet, and then. And then they had, I think it was a last man standing match. It was a gimmick match that Nakamura won. And I remember being quite shocked because I didn't think Nakamura would stay near the top of the card. And ever since then, they fed him Tozawa, Otis, and now Chad Gable. And I'm thinking, who would be a good... They're probably keeping him at this level for a top guy. And I'm thinking, who is a top babyface? I mean, Cody Rhodes could be a choice, but I think he'll move on to Drew McIntyre in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Randy, like you said, Randy Orton feels like the only choice because who else is a top babyface that feels like the kind of target that Nakamura would go for? Unless you choose someone from SmackDown, but
I know.
That feels far-fetched.
Yeah, I don't know, and that's what's intriguing as I continue to go with this singles push for Nakamura without this obvious place for him to go because he's already battled Seth. And so it just, it's ripe for speculation. You know, it deserves the speculation it's getting. I don't know how I'm excited about that being a place where Randy would land. I don't know that they're going to, with how long he's been gone, tie him to one brand or the other necessarily. I don't think they'll feel constrained by that, but yeah. Mauricio, anything else from Raw that you want to bring up that we haven't talking about? Because our callers have covered a lot of bases, and Wayne in his comments certainly covered something that stood out to me in terms of seeing some finishes that I was conditioned to believe would be more tainted than they were. Anything else you want to bring up?
I'm looking at the card, and I think we've covered everything. I'm trying to... The only segment I think we haven't mentioned was... That brief confrontation between Rhea Ripley and Zoe Stark backstage. I think they could have, if this was a go-home show to that field, I think they could have done a better job. I almost completely forgot this happened.
Yeah, I think they wanted to give a little bit to it, but I think they realized it's a pretty weak match. And so they want to give it a little bit of attention, but not a lot, because I just don't think they think it's particularly essential to the audience that they draw for the Survivor Series. But I don't know if you want to show your hand as much as they did. But, I mean, putting Zoe in this spot gives her a higher profile, even in losing, than she would have if she didn't have this spot. And the card is strong enough that sometimes I almost think it's a strategy for them to put somebody who fans don't really see as a threat to a title in a title match on a PLE, just so that when they come up short, fans look at them as someone who was in a title match on a PLE, and even though they came up short, that makes them a bigger deal than if they're left off the show or part of just some, you know, random match otherwise. And that might be what this is, just giving her a little bit of a resume bullet point on a show that it's not important for it to be a feud that people are ranking super high in terms of their priority or reason for watching the show.
I mean, yeah, they've been doing that for years. I remember, I think it was 2011, 22, and 2012, when the Royal Rumble match sells the pay-per-view. So they had Dolph Ziggler, who was at this point mid-card, maybe upper mid-card challenge for the world title, and slowly transitioned him into the world title. Just last year, they had Shotzi challenge for the women's title, because the War Games match were the ones that were selling the pay-per-view. So yeah, it's good. It's a good spot for Zoe. Like, try, and maybe they could do something interesting. Maybe this could be the show where Trish Stratus returns. That could be something interesting to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think overall they did a good job hyping Survivor Series tonight? Just broadly speaking, did they hit the important points effectively and you know, strategically enough?
I mean, I have my biases. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of babyface Miz, and I feel a little bit deflated by the end of the show. But the War Games match and Gunther Miz, the crowd were well more than hot for them. I think that was a great job for them. Not so much for Zoe versus Rhea, but yeah, that's besides the point. But yeah, it's overall pretty good go home show for Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Now let's see how they do with SmackDown, because I mean they also had the segment with Becky Lynch and Damage Control, so they even built that to that match during this show.
Yeah, I mean, we had just them show up and brawl, but it didn't really stick by the end of the show. But they'll certainly follow up on that on Friday, and we'll get more on the Carlito Santos match too on Friday for sure. Not a lot for SmackDown to talk about otherwise, so they got to add some stuff. It's only a 5-match card at this point. I mean, they might stick with that, but I think the development would be maybe the speculation on a brand versus brand elimination match.
Yeah, but I think they will stick with 5. Last year it was also a 5-match card, and I think they would need more time to build a brand versus brand match.
Well, I mean, they could do the brand versus brand at the pre-show. I mean, it could really be mid-card heels from all this against mid-card heels, mid-card baby faces from Pierce, and just make that like a pre-show match too. But I'm, from a match length standpoint, I mean, the two War Games matches are going to eat up a lot of time, but Carlito Escobar with, you know, what we've seen from Carlito, I don't expect that to fill more than 12 minutes. And Ripley Stark, I don't think it'll fill more than 12 minutes. And Gunther Miz probably shouldn't, even if Miz puts up a spirited fight. So you're looking at a show under 3 hours, even if the two War Games matches go long. So I think there's room with the supporting three matches announced right now to add a match.
Now that you'd say, I think... Yeah, they could fit something, but I'm thinking, what could it be? I'm thinking maybe a feud from a SmackDown, but I'm thinking, what's a feud that could fit on this card? And I can't. Maybe they could do something with the Bloodline, because now that they've been doing with LA Knight and Solo Sikoa, that could be something they could add to the card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That match should feel, let's say, 10 to 15 minutes, and it should feel in that spot that is left on the card.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not for super long PLEs, but this show feels like it could use another match, um, or or even two, because some of these other matches might go short. And I'm still not against the traditional Survivor Series match, but it might seem a little much just because you have two War Games matches with so many people involved. You don't have to go there. You know, you don't have to do, you know, not that it's stale, but it would be, you're right. I mean, it'd be a very short amount of time to build that match up, but it might also be the right amount of time to build that match up because it really would feel prelim.
I mean, if they could do just a battle royale on the British, they do like a dual branded battle royale, kind of like they did during like 2 years ago, except without all the pizza advertisements.
Yeah. Well, cool, Mauricio. It's been great to talk WWE with you again. Thanks for doing the show. Glad it worked out.
Okay. Once again, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks to our callers and emailers and listeners. And we'll talk to you Wednesday night after Dynamite. And we'll have our here on the Red Logo Show, the post show. Jake Barnett scheduled to be my co-host after Dynamite. We have a lot to talk about with Tony Khan's media Q&A stirring some issues. So check out Eric Rowe's editorial at pwtorch.com if you haven't yet on that. I know some wrestlers in AEW have some consternation about how TK is handling himself, and that comment in particular expressed to me as a point of concern from within the company. So we might have that to talk about in addition to other things. And I'm sure we'll talk about that with Rich Fan on the flagship tomorrow on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Blue Logo Show. If you have questions or topics for us on the flagship, the email address, as always, is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. For more of our take on Raw, check out Mauricio's Raw Report and my Raw Report at pwtorch.com. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.